The crisis between Iran and Saudi Arabia continues, mainly since Saudi Arabia continues to carry with its anti-Iran rhetoric. Iran has responded in a number of ways, calmly and peacefully, and diplomatically. Like Iran's Foreign Minister Zarif's op-ed in the New York Times, accusing Riyadh of brainwashing terrorists and trying to drag the entire region into confrontation. In this edition of The Debate, we'll ask that from our guests and also look at the reasons why Saudi Arabia is so keen to drag out this crisis instead of trying to resolve it. Let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Debate. We have American intelligence linguist Scott Rickert, who joins us from Tampa, Florida. We have political analyst Jihad Morakata, who joins us from Beirut. Gentlemen, welcome. Jihad Morakata, I'll start with you. It's day 11 now since Sheikh Nimr was executed, and the ninth day since Saudi Arabia began its diatribe against Iran after Iranians reacted by their actions on the Saudi embassy. Why do you think Saudi Arabia continues to drag this out? If you were to make a list, can you name us some of the positives and the negatives by Saudi Arabia dragging this out?
Actually, I do not agree with you. I do not think Saudi Arabia is dragging it out, because had Saudi Arabia been dragging it out, you would not have had the resolution of the Arab League yesterday. The resolution of the Arab League yesterday was quite smooth, I would say, even though it had a bit of an aggressive tone. And the aggressive tone is not going to change overnight. Just remember, I mean, people have burned their embassy in Tehran and the consulate in Iran. So it is not something that they can take lightly. More particularly, since you have to see it in the overall confrontation, if you may say so, between Iran and Saudi Arabia, over Iraq, over Syria, over Yemen, and so on and so forth. So basically, in this environment, burning the Saudi embassy and the consulate in Iran is not something that the Saudis are going to take lightly. So it's not because Iran overnight say, well, you know, forget about it, we want to be good friends and good neighbors, that things are going to calm down. So I do not agree with your question. Why is Saudi dragging it out? Because it is a major thing.
Okay, well, Scott Rickert, maybe you can, first of all, if you have a reaction, go ahead. But I'm looking at some of the actions that Saudi Arabia is committing in the region. I'm putting it into context. And if you'd like, you could also put that forward for us if you can.
Well, certainly Saudi Arabia is acting out of the response to the burning of an embassy. But I think what the other guest fails to recognize as to what the reaction is coming out of Tehran and out of the Iranian people at the horrible execution and murder of an innocent leader of the Shiite minority in Saudi Arabia. Obviously, no one wants to condone any kind of destruction of foreign diplomatic properties, and certainly the Iranian government is going all out to track down the individuals that were involved in this to hold them accountable. But this is not the first time these kinds of things have happened. Obviously, other embassies around the world are attacked when atrocities are committed, and certainly not addressing the massive amounts of arming that the Saudi Arabians and, by the way, the other Arab League partners, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, all of these puppet states to the Western oligarchs of the oil empire that actually has conducted all the foreign policy for the Middle East that has been in line with the British Empire and the American empires for quite some time, over a century. So once you start looking at the root cause, the financiers of the actual oil empires and the financiers of the military-industrial complex empires, these are the roots of the problems that are causing this in Tehran with the individuals who are rising up in anger against this because they're very much aware of it. And thankfully, many of the Saudi youth and certainly the Saudi minority Shiite organizations are very much aware of these same facts.
Jihad Morakata, I'm looking at this article that was posted in the New York Times, written by Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. Did you read it?
No, I missed it, but what was it about?
Well, this was about basically the current crisis that exists, if you want to call it a crisis, between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And lots of points made there by Iran's foreign minister. One of them is something I'd like to ask you. One premise being that Saudi Arabia supports extremism in the region. Does Saudi Arabia support a terrorist and extremism in the region, Jihad Mokhtari?
Well, it depends how you define extremism. Because extremism today has been defined in terms of Daesh. But people forget that there is extremism in Syria on behalf of Bashar al-Assad. People forget that there is extremism in Iraq on behalf of Nouri al-Maliki. Were it not of the policies of Nouri al-Maliki, Daesh would not have existed in Iraq. So basically, it is extremism when it has now become something very major in the world. But when it was happening against the Sunnis in Iraq and in Syria, nobody called it extremism. So extremism is depending on your point of view. Is Saudi Arabia supporting extremism? No, it is fighting Al-Qaeda, because Al-Qaeda wants to unseat the Saudi monarchy. So basically, 43 of the 46 or of the 47 who were executed were Al-Qaeda members. On the other hand, Prince Mohammed bin Naif was interior minister for Al-Qaeda attempts against his life. It's very difficult to talk about extremism when Saudi Arabia is at the receiving end of this kind of attitude.
Scott Rickard, you heard Jihad Mokhtari talk about extremism in terms of the way you define it. Isn't that the thrust of the problem that exists when you have that type of viewpoint, such as Russia and Iran wanting, along with the Syrian government, a list of terrorist groups that are being supported to be submitted for these Syrian peace talks? Therein lies the problem, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. Unfortunately, what the other guest fails to recognize again is the fact that Saudi Arabia is absolutely arming individuals alongside Qatar, alongside the United Arab Emirates, these other Arab League puppet states, and they're the funnel for the Western military-industrial complex to provide these weapons. And unfortunately, just a second, please, sir. And unfortunately, what happens here is that, yes, these individuals are being trained by the Western intelligence, are being trained by Turkish intelligence, are being trained also by Saudi and Lebanese forces, not the Hezbollah forces, but the kinds of allies, the kind of allies that these particular guests like you have that are very pro-West, very pro-finance on the Western side, that still reside in Lebanon. Lebanon is very much split. Lebanon is very much split because they have a lot of individuals in Lebanon who are very pro-West and support the Western imperialism that has made up this this story around Assad being some brutal dictator, when in fact those wars were started in Hama and in Dara and these areas, and also El Hasaka region that is basically mostly Kurdish groups like the PKK and the YPG that have traditionally been against the Syrian government no matter who was there. So my point that I'm trying to make is that the story that you're hearing from the other guest is absolutely untrue about what's happened with Assad. Assad has been brutally attacked. He is not the one initiating the attacks. He's responding to a global imperialist move from many NATO countries, including France, the United Kingdom, the United States, including Turkey, and certainly from Jordan and from Israel, and absolutely every one of the Arab League countries. So it's unfortunate. And of course he doesn't believe it. And that's
but
the point,
don't know
is
what
that
you're
what we're running
about.
Up against
you don't
that
live
he's
in
living
the area.
In a fantasy. You're living, I know exactly what I'm talking about, and I can provide
you are
many
living
details
in fantasy,
to you
don't live in the
to
area.
Travel to Beirut and share it with you.
I am going to provide
now,
you details.
Me, I know exactly what I'm talking about. I've been studying this for 30 years, sir.
Bashar al-Assad is a dictator. Sir, excuse me. Bashar al-Assad is a dictator. He is a bloody dictator. He kills his own people. He has been killing his own people with barrel bombs over the last 5 years. He is a bloody dictator. I have been at the receiving end of Mr. Bashar al-Assad. So doesn't matter what you read in the newspapers.
I'm sure you have, because we have been the victims here of Bashar al-Assad. Arming individuals that were actually causing warfare in this country.
I am a dissident against who I am in my own country,
sir. You can expect the country to respond to that warfare.
I am in my own country. Bashar al-Assad is a bloody dictator, and he should go. Those who are like you who support him,
absolutely wrong,
those
sir.
Who provide weapons to him,
I don't
those
support
who fight
Bashar
on his behalf,
what
are
I
the
do
true
is
terrorists.
I present the facts.
These are the ones,
facts
these
that
are the
out
ones
there that,
that
show
are the terrorists,
that he was not the
others
one initiating
that
this
are
war.
Worse than Daesh, sir. They are, Bashar al-Assad initiated the war. Bashar al-Assad have been firing at his own people unarmed. He has been taking children from his
absolutely
from schools.
Incorrect, sir.
I don't know where you have been living, sir, but we have been living here in this country. We know these things. Bashar al-Assad is worse than Daesh. Daesh never bombed, barrel bombed cities altogether.
Thankfully, there is the Hezbollah
Daesh has been killing
individuals. In Lebanon to help
Bashar
support,
al-Assad has been
to
bombing
help
his country
the sovereignty
to the ground.
Of
as you say,
because individuals
that he's not
like
a terrorist
you are
and Daesh
absolutely
is a terrorist.
Off your rocker when
Daesh
it comes to Syria.
Is an angel in front of Bashar al-Assad.
Repeat that
what
last
are you talking
part.
About?
Say that again.
Daesh never destroyed the city.
Say that again about Daesh terrorists, what you just said, Jihad Mokhtari. Jihad Mokhtari? Okay, Jihad Mokhtari maybe doesn't have us right now. Well, Scott Rickard, let's go back to this. I don't know if you read the article, Scott Rickard, by Iran's foreign minister in New York Times. But there are some points made there, and I'm going to quote one of them. And one is, why have Riyadh officials not only continued to impede normalization, but are determined to drag the entire region into confrontation? You know, when we look at the combustible nature of the region, we know what happened with the execution of Sheikh Nimr, along with 46 other people, four Shiites altogether. And then, of course, what happened regarding Iranians who imposed their actions there on the Saudi embassy. But, you know, we're looking at a region that is in need of motion forward into resolving some crises. And what Saudi Arabia is doing, I don't know if you agree or not with Iran's foreign minister, is Saudi Arabia dragging the entire region into confrontation by their actions right now and as the days go by since the execution and since what Iranians did with the Saudi embassy?
Well, I'd say absolutely. When you look at the kinds of actions that Saudi Arabia has taken, it's desperate times require desperate measures, and this is a very desperate regime that has been exposed in many different ways. And the West, in some media outlets, is starting to become rightfully anti-Saudi Arabia. And so, unfortunately, the West is trying to exonerate itself from its partner in Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia is being left out in the cold. The price of oil is dropping at a dramatic rate. It's reached an all-time low in over a decade. You also have the subsidies of gas in Saudi Arabia that are being eliminated. So the poor in Saudi Arabia are starting to feel the pinch of the economic downfall. And also you have the exposure and of the failure in Yemen, whereby they've acted as a puppet government to go in and bomb and attack Yemen. And many of the military youth and all the operations are very much against that. And so there's not a lot of support for not only the foreign policy debacles that are going on with Saudi Arabia, but also the economic failure. So it's a regime in failure, and they're acting desperately, and unfortunately, their desperate moves are actually causing even more failure. You cannot substantiate the murder of Sheikh Nimr because this man was doing nothing but speaking out against the government. And this is, you know, obviously just a violation of human rights and free speech, murdering a totally innocent man who was rightfully speaking out against a very despotic government that has unfortunately been allied with the West for 100 years, and it certainly is a horrible ally for the United States, and as well as England and France. You know, the United States needs to check itself and look at who they've partnered with. And like you've mentioned earlier in the show, you've had Saudi Arabia lobbying heavily alongside of Israel in the United States to kill the Iran nuclear deal. And certainly those same individuals that were caught in Israel, bribing American politicians, I guarantee Saudi Arabia is very much as guilty as bribing American politicians. And this is absolute treason. The American politicians who have accepted these bribes need to be held accountable. And certainly the military and the financiers of these entire operations that are going on in the Middle East, using Saudi Arabia as a channel or a funnel, as well as the other Gulf state allies, to create terrorism in the region. These individuals that have been doing this in the United States government need to be held accountable in United States courts, and as I said many times, Nuremberg-style courts for war mm-hmm. crimes that have been committed not only in Syria, but certainly Libya, Yemen, and other places around the world.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned in the beginning there when you started speaking, Scott Rickard, you talked about how Saudi Arabia is dealing with some problems at home. And, well, let me read you one of the headlines that I'm reading. And I'm noticing this a lot since this crisis that erupted between Saudi Arabia and Iran. This one headline says that Saudi Arabia crumbles at home, struggles abroad. There's a strong domestic element to the concerns, and it starts listing some of the problems they're having inside Saudi Arabia. But the landscape, at least media-wise, print-wise in particular, seems to point to the direction that Saudi Arabia is a nation that's, or a kingdom that's not on a steady foot, that it may be about to fall. And many of the media out there is talking about how the U.S. is not going to fully back Saudi Arabia, even though now it appears it still is. And talks about how oil, for example, doesn't have the same lure. Do you think that Saudi Arabia is somewhat on very unstable footing, both domestically and with their foreign policy errors that they've committed?
I think it's possible. Unfortunately, the power of the financiers can supersede any of the decisions that are made by the politicians. And so when you look at the actual wealth that's around the relationships, not only in Saudi Arabia, but certainly Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, these ties bind at the highest levels at the World Bank. And by the way, the other caller was very much tied into the World Bank financiers. He went to the French schools for the finance degrees that he has, and he's worked alongside a lot of these Western financiers that are totally in bed with the Saudi Arabians and the other Gulf states. So I think what we have here is a potential for the financiers to cut their ties there, but I don't think that we'll see anytime soon, but mm-hmm. I think there's a potential for that to happen in the future. I think if there is a coup, or if there is a fall of the al-Saud family, and you see a more democratic government in Saudi Arabia, that could be potential good for the region. But unfortunately, I don't think that the other Western agenda in the region fits that model. So, my hope for that is very limited. I think right. What probably happen is that they'll continue to prop up Saudi Arabia.
Uh-huh. Thank you for that. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. That's former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickard, who spoke to us from Tampa. And unfortunately, we lost Jihad Mercade a little bit towards the end of our program there. Political analyst Jihad Mercade, who spoke to us from Beirut. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Tavoy, the entire team in the capital, Tehran. It's goodbye.